We'll wait for Jeff to return, because that will be... He wouldn't want us to start without him, I'm sure. What's he done? Okay.
Still four more to come.
Four more to come. Okay, folks. Thanks so much for staying to ask questions and to hear more of David. I know we've all been really enjoyed your message this morning, David, and we'll continue to enjoy your presence and Joe's as well as time goes on. What I'm suggesting we do, rather than using a handheld mic, we will ask people to speak a question as clearly as possible. If anyone can't hear the question, put your hand up and I will repeat it before I ask David to reply. In my job, as most of you know, I worked for HMRC, and I remember...
Oh, so I got a boo working for Barclays.
Not yet.
Nothing.
There we go, you nothing. See it. A former chairman of the board of Inland Revenue, whenever he had a meeting with staff, he always asked for three questions to start with, and he would decide which of the three he was going to answer. Now, David has asked, possibly for a different reason, that we have three questions to start with, and he will decide to... And it may be some questions will touch on a similar issue. So I will ask for three questions, and then David will take them. So, first question...
There's a lady just through there. Yeah.
Mary, yes, please. Thank you, Mary. So, if you didn't hear every word, Mary's question was about the disappearance, I suppose, of young people in our churches, and what ideas David might have for stimulating hundreds of young people to come and join Emmanuel and other churches in time. I should perhaps mention that we don't at present, well, apart from two or three young, we don't at present look after youngsters in a Sunday school here, but there is a messy church run by the Old Town Partnership, which Sam and Stuart in particular and others are helping with. And that works, bringing together young people from the different churches of Old Town. That was question one. Question two from Mike.
You mentioned at the very beginning that one of all the myths that we may be leaving for a future generation, and that's very closely tied to what Mary was saying. And I just wonder, how can we influence the future generation? And in my experience, they're very reluctant to listen to the wise old heads.
And question number three, David.
I'm going to start with that. We all recognise the problem we have within the URC for new ministers, and we are now facing, or will be facing in the future, three churches, two big churches in this synod that require a shepherd. Do you have any views on how that might happen? Because we have Emmanuel, Highworth, Cricklay. Surely the synod will not leave us in a whirlpool of having to find ministers every Sunday within our pulpit. We need a stable leadership.
Thank you.
Has anybody got any easy questions?
Peter.
Okay, so I think there's two sets of questions there, and I'm going to split them in two. That's why I wanted to cluster the questions a little bit. So I'm going to talk about the young people and the, how do we attract them and how do we engage with them to here? Don't know. And that's really important. I don't know. And I don't understand. Do you mind if I stand up? I'm just a bit more. What is going on in the church today? Have you seen the latest statistics about the young people going to church? It's staggering. It really is. And we don't know why. That's the honest answer. We honestly don't know why. Young people, Gen Z, is it? I don't know about you, I get confused between all the generational names. Young people are returning to church, and it's quite staggering. I was in a church not that long ago, a couple of months back in May, and it was an absolutely fantastic church. I think they had one person in their 60s, one person in their 70s, the other 11 members were all in their 80s. Sorry, 90s, yeah. But I think they were one or two in the 90s. And interestingly, there was one person there who was 23 years old. And I said to him, I was a bit more pastoral than this. What on earth are you doing here? And he said, well, one morning I woke up and I thought, I need to get to a Presbyterian church. Looked on the internet, there wasn't one, found that it was the United Reformed Church. Came here and thought, wow, they're quite old here. And he said, I came a couple of Sundays and he said, love the sincerity of the place. And he's still there today. So I think, and I've got no easy answer for that first question about what attracts young people. Because back in the day, it used to be table tennis, badminton, youth group. I mean, I suggest most of us who have been in church for some time have been involved in some of those things. These days, we don't really know what's going on. And if you look at a lot of the headlines in a lot of the social media, the Bible Society is trying to do some big research into why it's happening. We don't know. But some young people, more than the last 20 years, are now going to church. So, that then asks the awkward question of, well, are we seeing them come to our church? And if the answer's no, remember what I said earlier about, you know, the mist of what's going on and why are we half full or half empty or why are we built in a certain way? We cannot find a real trait that says, those young people are going to that church because of the quality of the coffee and biscuits, or because of the quality of X, Y, or Z, or because. There is something quite mysterious about it. I think that's really important to hang on to. Sometimes we can have whatever programs we want. if we're dealing with God and the Holy Spirit, we quite often have to find ourselves saying, excuse me, we don't know what's going on, but God might do. However, that is still a little bit on us when we say, but why not our church? But I can't answer that, because why is this young person going to this small church of only 13 there on a Sunday, and he's going, actually, I love the sincerity. I do think that actually what I've just said is really important, that having worship communities that are sincere is the most important thing. I'm going to go on a little rant here. Forgive me. I do this. I think sometimes we get hung up on truth. And you'll hear people say, what is the gospel truth? Please hear me really carefully when I say this, because don't just listen to the first part. The gospel truth doesn't matter anymore. Because the gospel truth can be anything you want it to be in this day and age. We hear world leaders, don't we, telling us the truth? I can see by some of your faces what your reaction is to that. What is the truth? I think, going back to your question, sir, about how do we connect, I'm trying to flow one into the next. It doesn't matter what we say our truth is, it's how we live our truth that is the most evangelical tool we've got and our most missional tool. Any church can say we're inclusive, but we don't like young children making a noise in church. Well, what is your truth then? Because you said you were inclusive, but you're clearly not. So I think the challenge for the church today is not just to shout its gospel truth. I think we're getting pretty tired of truth statements. I think if we are to connect with the younger generation, we need to be primed to be sincere communities. Interestingly, what we do think, some of the early research is showing that some young people are finding faith communities, places that actually do engage in their issues, and their issues are based around equality and environment. And some young people have openly said they've been looking for those communities and they've not found them, and they have found them at church. Which does suggest there is some influence going on. I think it's done in a quite different way to how it has been done. And I'm not sure there's anyone, even the Bible Society, have got any easy answers for that. But the most amazing thing is, for more than 20 or even 30 years, more young people are starting to go to church now than are leaving the church. That's quite incredible. So I get the frustration. I visit church after church without young people. I know the pain of that. Because we want to be inclusive kingdom of God images, don't we? But there is hope, and I would hang on to that. I have no simple answer for either of those questions, but there is hope. Someone else put their hand up at the back relating to that. Yeah. So I think, again, having that sincerity of knowing who we are and what we're able to live with those people. I think young people don't like... Well, this goes back. When you were a child, who really enjoyed being told what to do? I mean, as a teenager, I mean, you just know better than your mum or dad because they're like 136 years old. And what do they know about things? So I think, again, young people don't like being told what to do. I think they do like space to explore. And I pray that that is in some ways what Jesus means by we all need to be a bit childlike, not child, more Paul actually, but childlike, not childish.
Yeah. I would just say that from my perspective, we can get too hung up on no young people, because I have to look at the fact that one of our hymns says, the church is wherever God's people are serving. And we go out as individual representatives of the church through our faith, by our actions, by the words we speak, and by the way we're able to listen and connect with people through our faith, where we live and work and play. So we must, church may be changing, and I think it is changing, not just the building structure which we've got hung up with for 2,000 years almost. So I live in eternal hope that if we go out and live our faith, we're going to attract people.
So let me also share, I'm just aware of time and I want to get around to the other questions as well. One other quick reflection on that is, I don't know if you've ever done archery before, stood there with a target, with bow and arrow, and you've got two options. You either try and hit the bullseye in the middle, which is obviously the smallest part, or you just try and hit the target somewhere. I don't know what sort of a person you are. In our world today, trying to target young people coming to church is trying to hit the bullseye. There are fewer young people as a percentage of the population than there has ever been. More of a concern of mine is how are we not hitting the target with people in their 60s, 70s and 80s, of whom there are far more. Our churches should be getting people in for that generation. So I think the young people is important. We should never let that go. I'm delighted to hear Messy Church, but it is a far bigger question. Let me leave that there, if I may. Process for what you're about. So there's two questions here, process and shepherding. Does that kind of cover? Okay. So, the big picture of church, not just the United Reformed Church, but church, is, I don't know if you've seen the big news about theological training this week. No. It's the sort of thing I get instantly, but you might not. But some of you may have heard of Spurgeon's College, which has been a fantastic Bible college for teaching normally young people, but getting people ready for ministry as well, gave 4 days' notice of its closure. It's closed with immediate effect. It's just run out of money because of the decline of students who are going there. Now, well done, moderator, bringing all the good news, aren't you? This is really encouraging. It's important we hear that, because sometimes we think these are just United Reformed Church issues or Methodist issues or Church of England issues. They're not. Things are shifting and changing. So the question of how do we ensure shepherding is a really important question. And one of the comments just now was about how things are, about churches changing. And so is the way we have to think of shepherding our congregations. So one of my key roles is to be in the heart of conversations about deployment. Do you know what that word means? How do we deploy our ministers in our churches? These days, it's a bit like trying to feed the 5,000 with one fish and half a loaf. Because no matter what we think, we are looking at different times of how many ministers there are to be spread around our churches. And there's so much. This could be a whole day's conference. You're going to get an answer in 3 minutes. We've got to look at how we can shepherd beyond a dog collar. That's one of the things that we are now well aware of. I think we've been trying to get more student numbers, actually, the number of people going forward for training has slightly increased in the last 2 or 3 years. Again, actually, going back, we don't know why. We don't know why, but it has, thanks be to God. But our problems are, how do we spread our resources through our churches? It's interesting to know the ratio of ministers to members has not changed since 1972. I don't know if that's a shock to you. The ratio of ministers to members since 1972 has not changed. Up and down a little bit, but really the same. So the number of members has come down. The number of ministers has come down. What hasn't come down is the number of churches. Okay? That is what's really shaken things up a bit. So, shepherding. We are, as a synod, every synod looks at things in their own way. We are just starting this week at Pastoral Committee on Wednesday to look at all the forms of ministry that we have and looking at where we are strongest and what we can use. So we're left with, obviously, ministers of word and sacrament, people like me, and we're split into two types. We split everything into types and categories. Stipendiary, those who are paid. Non-stipendiary, those who aren't paid. But we also have other forms of ministry. We have retired ministers, some of whom want to continue ministering in some way. We have lots of people who are accredited for preaching or worship leading. We have people who have been doing the Stepwise course. If you don't know about Stepwise, we'll send you loads of information. But it's different streams that try and encourage confidence and try and build people up in certain areas of their Christian life. The key one is worship leading. We have companion ministers, companion elders. Don't worry if you don't know what they are. We can get information through to you on that. We have a whole range of ways now in which we can offer a shepherding role. What we've not gone down the line of is in Methodism. They've had that turnover of every 7 years, I think it was. Normally that's getting longer now. We don't want to follow that pattern, but we do still rely on ministers being called. And what that means is they don't get a set contract, so they might feel called to a church and might leave after 3 years, 13 years, or 23 years. We never know how that's going to go. There are three ways a ministry can end, but anyway. Normally, the minister says, my work here is done, I think God is calling me on. The other main way is you as a church can say to me, David, we think our minister's done. Could you move them on? There are obviously other ways, and you're about to experience one of those, which is retirement. So it's not quite as simple as I said, and there's other ways as well, but not worth getting into. So we never know how long that shepherd is going to be there for, but we do believe that God's call is the key deciding factor in that. But it's not just about ministers of word and sacrament being stipendiary. It is about a whole team of shepherds now. Even back in biblical times, you often had daytime shepherds and nighttime shepherds, and they took on their different responsibilities. And I think that's an interesting pattern that we're having to look at more. Loads more, but does that help clarify the shepherding issue a little bit in some ways? So process-wise, Roberts announced he's leaving. When's he leaving? I can't remember the month. It's after Easter.
We're waiting for a firm decision which the Ministries Committee was supposed to have made in the last couple of weeks, but I've not heard the answer yet. It was agreed that he would retire next January.
Yep.
He asked a year ago if he could stay on to the end of April.
I think that's been approved.
I think we're all assuming that will
I
be
think
approved.
That's been approved. That has been approved.
Yeah. Okay.
So, what will happen then is what's helpful is the number of ministerial changes that are going on in this area. So, as I mentioned earlier, on Wednesday our pastoral committee is meeting and we're starting to look at deployment, not just for this area, but for the whole of the synod. Because from our point of view, we would love to chuck in loads of ministers into this area, but if we do that, we then know that other parts of the synod won't get any ministers. So we have to look at how we can best do that. But that conversation, now we know what's kind of on the horizon here, we can start that discussion now, whereas normally we wouldn't be able to do that until probably March next year. So we've got a bit more time to be as prudent as we can in our planning. What will happen is that when Robert leaves, we will be trying to find someone to be an interim moderator for you. Now, I don't know what your recollection of an interim moderator is. It used to be someone who would preach twice a month, lead communion, come to elders' meetings, come to church meetings, and be a sort of stand-in minister. That's not what it is anymore. We just don't have the people to do that in that way. What an interim moderator will do is guide you through the process of finding a new minister. And they will guide you through your profile, what other churches you'll be working with at the same time to call a minister, and how that might work. And that interim moderator will be with you, hopefully, all the way through until you find a minister. Which begs the next question, as when will you find a minister? For that, as I've mentioned, we still believe in the call process, which means I can delightfully say you'll have to ask God. Because I just don't know. And that's not being flippant. I really mean that. If we believe God calls a minister, I can't meddle with that and be manipulating individuals into place. That would be unfair on you, unfair on the minister, and it might not be listening to God well enough. So how long that process will be, I just don't know. I guess the quickest turnaround would be 9 months. Part of that is because, obviously, you've got to start... If someone's interested, you've got to meet them a few times. You've got to invite them to preach with a view. That's going to take some months. Then they have to give 3 months' notice if they're already in a church. So 9 months is pretty speedy. What's the longest time it can take? Oh, it's time for lunch, is it? Did you say? We don't know. There are some churches who are looking... But you will get guidance on how to make your profile as honest and attractive as possible.
Can I just add a quick point here? David's alluded to the fact that at the same time as Robert retires, within a few months, the minister of Emmanuel Hayden Wick retires, and the minister looking after Malmesbury, Wootton Bassett and Cricklade also retires. So... I think a question I'm sure others will ask as well as me is, are we just looking at Emmanuel and Highworth here? Are we looking at the whole of North Wiltshire, which looks as though it could be without an ordained minister at all by next a year's time?
Yes. Quite seriously, I meant what I said. It's about trying to feed the 5,000... with one fish and half a loaf. That's where we're at. I can't stand here and make any guarantees about what ministry you'll get because we haven't started those discussions yet. And some of those discussions will include you. We are not here just to say, that's the plan. Yeah, get on with it. Some of it will be meeting or discussing or at least hearing from your elders here about how that will happen. And the big changes that are coming is what's enabling us to get started now on this rather than wait till they've gone. So actually, I know it feels like, oh my goodness, we're going to be without an ordained minister. The period you're actually without an ordained minister may well be shorter because of what they're doing. So I hear the frustration and the pain of that loss almost, but actually I think, they don't mind me saying this, some of the conversations I've had with them, all three of them, are that they know it's going to actually help us get a move on and get ahead of the game to try and make this as open and viable as possible, as quickly as possible.
As a former church secretary, having lived through at least three vacancies, I understand everything you've been saying. One thing which I must thank you for is your belief in the call. Because at the back of my mind, I mentioned it to Jeff before church this morning, how far is the call a vanity amiss?
What was the other question? There was another question, and then I'm going to come back to that.
And then we'll need to call a halt in 2 or 3 minutes so that people can move through and give you some lunch before you have to travel to Somerset. Anne.
Okay, so the question was, are we actively seeking ministers from beyond the URC, especially overseas? We have a list of ministers who have been deemed suitable for ministry in the URC, who we are trying to see if we can find a church for. So yes, absolutely. Yep, so really interesting. I'm just discovering all this as new moderator, so I'm excited to discover this. When we put a new pastorate out, when we advertise a new pastorate, it has to be advertised to United Reformed Church ministers for 3 clear months before we can advertise it to ministers overseas. Yes, because there's more decisions, because we don't know what we'd be advertising. Okay? But we don't know what we're advertising.
We may have more than just Emmanuel and Highworth for this individual, you see.
That's the dilemma. Plus, what do you want your next minister to be? Oh, I can see one or two faces going, oh, that's a good question. So how wrong would it be for me to go and find Robert version 2 if you said to me, we are really thankful for it. So the churches I've just left, for example, thank God have chosen their next minister completely different to who I am. Why would they? Because I wasn't perfect. There's another confession. So thank goodness those churches that I've left have now gone for someone who's bringing a different skill set to those churches, because those churches now are going to get a different bit of life compared to what I can offer them. So until you're absolutely clear on who you want, I am certainly not going to ask for people to step in until we're clear on that. And there is the reality, one fish, half a loaf. So, but yes, we are advertising beyond, and indeed beyond not just overseas, but beyond the URC. Even within this country. Right.
Let me just ask Sam.
Yep.
And then...
Well, hold on. I haven't done this.
Hold
so,
a bit more.
Gosh, there were loads of questions in there, weren't they? Ask the question again. I'm going to be interested to see what order you remember them in.
Given the nature, I'm just delighted...
Yeah, the call.
Yeah. But how
yep.
and how different we really are, how far
so there's the vanity. So it's the trade-off between what's call and what's human resources. If you worked in industry, you move staff depending on their need. There is, of course, that. There is, of course, the issue of being savvy. I'll use that word, savvy, about who comes where. But if we forget the call, there is no point in elders and churches discerning what's next in their ministry. There is no point in preaching with a view. There is no point in anything like that. I'm quite loath to give on, to give that up as part of our church tradition. So that's a really simple. Does that comfort at all? Last question.
Can we just listen to Sam, and then we'll need to call a halt so we can particularly get you having your half loaf.
Yeah.
Before 1 o'clock, Sam.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's why we can't just advertise, absolutely, until that's agreed. So it used to work. I'm just going to recap on this because some of you may be used to how it used to work. And it's worth reminding ourselves of that so we understand how much better things are now. So I suspect even before Robert came, what you should have done is waited for the previous minister to have left. Then a couple of months later, you will have said, right, let's start to think about our next minister. We need to get a pastorate profile team. That would have taken another month. You would then started to have written your profile. That would have taken 2 or 3 months. 6 months after your minister would have left, you would probably have said that to Synod, and then we'd have started to look for a minister. The way things are going to work now is, I know you've already done your annual mission review, because I know Gerald's really hot on getting all that done in this area and starting work on that, so that's really good. That will tell us roughly where each of the churches is in this area. We will need to look at what we think the needs of the churches might be, what we think ministry we can put into this area, and then look at how that might work. You've also probably been used to having your own minister. That might not be the case again. Because there are different examples of how ministry are working. So in some areas we have team ministries. There are some areas with 12 churches and 2 ministers. It's not 6 churches have 1 minister. It is 12 churches share 2 ministers. That goes back to the call and you bring out those gifts of people. So we're going to be looking at how can we best provide ministry to this area. Again, that will need conversation with you. But that will start before Robert leaves. So I understand how frustrating it may be. Trust me, though, we are in a far better stage, far better process than the URC has ever been in getting things sped up. It just might not feel like it. The specific question of when will that be decided, I don't know that, because until I've got all the churches in this area to give us that information, we can't determine that. So there will be, but I know that Robert, Sarah and Gerald are aware of these issues and we're already having conversations about how to get us in the best place for that. My aim would be that all of that would... My hope, and this is just a hope, is that if we could know that by February, that would be excellent. To know where we're going before your minister has even gone would be staggering for church life. So does that, but that is just my own hope. I'm not saying that's a committed committee response, but I think that would be prudent and possible.
Thank you, David. And thank you for being so open with us. If you all go through to the hall now to have some lunch, people will be able to ask more questions of you on a
Absolutely.
More sort of one-to-one
I'm just delighted page. That there's obviously not even a question about Tottenham being the best football team. So well done, everybody. We're all in agreement with that, at least.
Thank you very much for your time.